All right, Daniel chapter 1. There'll be a little bit of review in conjunction with the first few verses here. All right, let's get our historical running start, all right? We have reigning over the kingdom of Judah, not the combined kingdom with Saul, David, and Solomon, but starting with Rehoboam. You have a total of 19 kings in succession, a little bit of overlap with a few co-regencies along the way. But you have 19 kings. The last four were awful, and although only there were two of those that only reigned 3 months each. All right, we have we start out with good King Josiah. Good King Josiah. He is number. Get this straight in my head. He is number 15. He is the last king, last good king of Judah. He is a great king. He is probably second only to David as far as the caliber of the man. And he dies at the age of 39 in battle against the Egyptians. And the people take not his eldest son, but one of his other sons. We don't know how many he had altogether. These guys had usually had several wives and sometimes as many as 15, 20, 30 sons. Can you imagine trying to keep birthdays would have been a just anyway. So they take one of his sons and they put him on the throne. And his name is Jeconiah. And he's on the throne for 3 months. And then the Egyptians come back after getting their heads handed to them in the Battle of Carchemish up in northern Syria. They come back and they are consolidating power further south, trying to anyway. It doesn't last real long. And they take Jeconiah and they take him down to Egypt and he never leaves. And they take his older brother and put him on the throne. And his name is Jehoiakim. Okay. Got to keep this part of it straight. Jehoiakim, as in Kimberly. All right. He is an awful man. If you were to go through all the places in Jeremiah and 2 Kings and some other places where he is mentioned and trying to reconcile, it takes a little bit of work to try to get everything to go together. He does not go to Babylon. He's not killed in battle. It just says that he dies. And he's like 35 years old. And he was an awful man. And the city of Jerusalem was under siege. Nebuchadnezzar had showed up when he was king. Now, before I get too far, mention that the Egyptians came and they took Jeconiah down to Egypt. We're done with him. He's one of the sons of Josiah. This guy is the next son of Josiah. Not necessarily in sequence, but the next one to be king. And he pays tribute to Egypt. Well, a few years go by, and Nebuchadnezzar shows up at the gates. He's not an Egyptian. No, he's coming from Babylon. He's the one who had defeated the Egyptians way up north in northern Syria. And what he is doing is he is consolidating his empire, and he's swallowing up the whole far eastern end of the Mediterranean, what is called the Levant. And everything that is Syria, everything that is Jordan, everything that is Israel, everything that is Lebanon today, he is incorporating into his empire. So he has all of Iraq already, and he is taking over that whole western part. Okay? And what he does is he shows up at the gates of the important cities, the capitals and so on, and says, capitulate. You guys are already paying tribute to the Egyptians, you just pay it to me. And there's evidently a brief siege, no overt battle or anything when he shows up at Jerusalem the first time. And finally, Jehoiakim says, okay. And at that time, we have the first deportation. This is the notes we looked at last week. We're doing a review here. The first page there at the top. So in 606 BC, and what he does, this was standard operating procedure. He would take a number of people, especially if they were nobles, and take them back to Babylon with him. There's a twofold purpose. What he's doing is he's gleaning the best of the best from every place he's going to be a help to him. And the second is they also serve, theoretically anyway, as hostages. That if the folks back in Jerusalem don't behave themselves, then we can always bump off the people back. Now, it never worked out that way because they're too valuable to them to bump off, but that's how it operates. So, during that first deportation, that's when Daniel goes back to Babylon, along with Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, who are Hananiah, Azariah, and Mishael, as far as the Hebrew names are concerned. Along the way, this guy decides, I'm tired of paying tribute to Babylon. I want to shake free of that. And so he sends emissaries down to Egypt, because it's probably cheaper. And so Nebuchadnezzar shows up again. And the city is under siege for a number of months, probably a better part of a year. And during that siege, this guy dies. Now, he was not carried off to Babylon. His son was. What became of this guy? Like I said, he's about 35 years old. Jeremiah said in a prophecy that he would die the death of a donkey, that they would drag him outside the gate and leave him there for carrion. Now, that was not what was typically done. But when he dies, the city's under siege. And I strongly suspect that what they did is either he died of natural causes, or more likely, somebody bumped him off. And they grabbed him by, I mentioned this last week, they got up on the top of the wall, grabbed him by the wrists and ankles, and threw the body out there for the Babylonians to see. Hopefully, they would leave, but they didn't. And so in the meantime, his 18-year-old son, let's get this straight, get it written down right in the first place. Jehoiakim is how it's pronounced, which makes it even more complicated. Jehoiakim comes to the throne. The people take his son and make him king. He's 18. Siege goes on for another 3 months, and he and his nobles and his mother, who is the queen, because it was the queen mother situation in ancient Israel, they walk out and they surrender. And they are carried away captive to Babylon. They're not treated necessarily real harshly. And the line of Messiah, by the way, as far as the genealogies there in Matthew and so on, go through this guy, because after he got to Babylon, he was imprisoned for a while, but later he was released and was able to have a family and was supported and so on, and his descendants produced Joseph. All right? So he's taken away captive, and they take this guy's brother, his uncle, so this would be the third son of Josiah, and the king of Babylon puts Zedekiah on the throne. Zedekiah is a dim bulb. All right? There's a reason he wasn't put on the throne earlier, even though he's one of the brothers. And also recognize the fact that they had taken the best of the best to Babylon already. Two different deportations. By the way, when he went to Babylon, they took Ezekiel. So Ezekiel went to Babylon during the second deportation. Zedekiah is on the throne for a total of 11 years. He's paying tribute to Nebuchadnezzar. And the leadership there, after having been through this twice before, they should have known better, decide, you know, let's rebel against Nebuchadnezzar. We'll send ambassadors down to Egypt. We'll try this again. Well, Nebuchadnezzar shows up. This is the third time he's shown up. And he's had enough of this. And so Jerusalem is destroyed. This guy is blinded and carried away in shackles back to Babylon, and there he dies. And that's the end of the kingdom in the Old Testament. All right? They got three shots at it, and these guys, all right? Daniel's with the first deportation. Okay, so now we can go back to chapter 1. In the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, came Nebuchadnezzar, king of Babylon, into Jerusalem and besieged it. And the Lord gave Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into his hand. He surrendered, remained king, but he surrendered. This is the first deportation. and with him part of the vessels of the house of God. All right? Not all of them, but he takes some of the finery there from the temple. A lot of it was gold. Some of that stuff had been there for ages and ages and ages. Understand, the kings were in succession for almost 400 years, all told. A lot of stuff accumulated in there. Been a couple of times where the city had been taken by foreign invaders, but for the most part, the temple stuff was left alone. People didn't, that would be the last thing people would take. You'd think that's where all the wealth was. Yeah, but they were afraid sometimes to mess with the temples. But Nebuchadnezzar takes some of it back, and he put it in the land, into the land of Shinar, which is the plain in southern Iraq today, where Babylon is, to the house of his god, Marduk, and brought the vessels into the treasure of his god, the god that Nebuchadnezzar worshipped at the time. And the king, now, from here on out, when you see king, it's going to be the king of Babylon. So can we talk about the kings of Judah? That's off the scene. And the king spake unto Ashpenaz. My kids love this guy. Ashpenaz. Look at your notes. Ashpenaz. What's his name mean? Possibly. Horse's nose. We don't know what his name means, but that fits. Okay? So whenever I read this, I always think of some poor guy with sort of this moose-shaped nose hanging off the front of his head. The king spake unto Ashpenaz, the master of the eunuchs. By the way, although there were a lot of eunuchs in the courts and so on, the term did not require somebody actually being emasculated. It became synonymous with various court officials, although it could be either or. And so he talks to the master, the chief of the eunuchs, that he should bring certain of the children of Israel, of the king's seed and of the princes. This is where we would hope to find the most highly educated, some of the brightest folks around. Children in whom was no blemish. So we want not only smart people, we want good-looking people. But well-favored and skillful in wisdom and cunning and knowledge and understanding science, and such as had ability in them to stand in the king's palace, and whom they might teach the learning and the tongue of the Chaldeans. So, again, mentioned that they went as hostages, but the reality is they're going there to serve the king of Babylon. If I am building my empire, and I'm doubling, basically, the size of my empire by swallowing up that western part of the Middle East, there's a lot of smart, talented people in there. And they're outside of my realm, so they're going to have experiences and so on. They're going to be outside of the experience of my people. And so I'm really going to be able to glean some cream here. And that's what he's doing. And he's going to put them to work for him and for his empire, for his kingdom. We're going to want young people. Almost every commentator I saw or read said that Daniel almost certainly was 14 to 16 years of age at this time. Young guy. You want a guy who is going to be able to make the transition. He's not too settled. You want a guy who can go from one culture to another. He can make that jump. You want somebody who's old enough, however, to be able to handle being away from mom if need be, which is the case here. So we're dealing with rounding up a bunch of high school freshmen and shipping them off to Babylon. We're making a determination. Are these guys, you know, we're going to give them all the SAT and the ACTs and find out how they rate. And we're going to glean the cream out of this area and take them off to Babylon. And when we get to Babylon, they're going to go to school for 3 more years. And we're going to teach them a number of different things. We're going to teach them the culture. We're going to teach them administration. They're going to teach them the language. Chaldean that you have here. Who are the Chaldeans? The Chaldeans were, but they're an old people. If you go back and read the beginning of the book of Job, and you have all these disasters happening to Job in quick succession, one of them, if I remember right, who ran off with the camels? The Chaldeans. All right? An early group. What they did is they lived on the outer fringe of Mesopotamia, far sort of where the desert fades into where you can grow some stuff. All right, they lived there, and they moved around. They were a nomadic people going up and down what is now western Iraq. They had some connections. Some of them say they were a tribe of the Aramaic people. Very likely that's a possibility. That's a strong likelihood. And somewhere along in their history, they moved down into southern Mesopotamia and gained control of the area around Babylon. Babylon was not founded by this people, but they came in and took over. So a lot of the people living in Babylon were not necessarily Chaldeans, but the people who were in charge were. All right. When you see the word Chaldean language, we are dealing basically with a, I got to be careful here, with a form of Aramaic. Sometimes this is sometimes translated in your King James Version, Chaldean. This is sometimes translated Syriac. All right. If you have a Strong's Concordance, it'll mention Chaldean on the spine if you have an older copy. It's a language that uses the same alphabet as Hebrew. It's very similar to Hebrew. It would be like, say, Spanish and Italian or something like that. There's going to be a lot of similar words. There's going to be some crossover. Some things very different, a lot of things similar. But it was also a language of commerce. These guys here are going to be taught Chaldean, Aramaic so well that it's going to become something that they're comfortable with and can use on a regular basis. And the Hebrew is sort of going to be fading into the background, possibly used amongst themselves, and that's about it. And the king appointed them, it says in verse 5, a daily provision of the king's meat. Don't think just meat as in flesh. Think of meat as food in general. These people here are, now it's appointed, the king made a decree, these young fellows, and we don't know how many of them there were, there may have been several hundred, are going to be getting the best of the best. They're going to get the finest fare that the kingdom has available. They are going to be eating the same stuff that the king eats. And the wine which he drank, and so nourishing them 3 years, at the end thereof they might stand before the king. So, think of a boarding school. That's basically what it is. I don't know if it's quite clear, but I think Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego were roommates, along with Daniel. So they're in a boarding school situation. The meals are provided. Everything is right there. The quote-unquote hosts are Chaldeans, though. They're not Jews. They have a totally different religion. They have a very different culture. Religiously especially. Now understand, when Jehoiakim was on the throne, he was a wicked, vile man. But Josiah was not ancient history. Alright? Josiah was ruling less than 5 years before. Now you read Jeremiah and you find out that a lot of the revival that happened under Josiah was pretentious. Josiah himself was a good man. Josiah himself was an earnest. Josiah himself was doing what he was supposed to be doing from the heart. And a lot of the people went along with him because they liked Josiah. It was not necessarily a great revival of heart, although there was some of that. But Jeremiah reproves the people that it was a superficial revival in a lot of ways. But you still would have had that faithful remnant even under the likes of wicked King Jehoiakim. And so you have Daniel, Hananiah, Azariah, and Mishael as the faithful remnant. And they have been deported to Babylon. It says in verse 6, now among these were the children of the children of Judah, Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, unto whom the king of the eunuchs gave names. We are going to try to assimilate these people into Babylonian culture. We are trying to make them Babylonians. And so we're not only going to bring them here and teach them what we believe and what we want them to do and everything, but we're even going to change their names. And so it mentions the names that they were given. And let's see. Now, Daniel, by the way, means, you got there in your notes, God is my judge, or God is judge. Hananiah, God is gracious. Mishael, who is like God. And then Azariah, Jehovah is my helper. And they get their names changed. Daniel becomes Belteshazzar. Bel will protect. There's some debate. Bel is probably a synonym for Marduk, who is the chief god of Babylon. Shadrach is inspiration of the sun, the deification idea of the sun. Meshach, belonging to the goddess of wine, and Abednego, servant of Nego, who was also one of the deities there. They had a whole plethora of gods and goddesses that they worshiped. So their names are changed. They are given pagan names, which has got to be something really excruciating for these guys. Because here they are trying to, they're thrust into a very difficult situation, even personally. And then to try to serve God under the circumstances that they find themselves in is going to be especially, and because they don't have any choice about anything so far. It's forced upon them. They are thrust into this situation. They don't have any recourse. Verse 8. This is where we get some dare to be a Daniel stuff. Now, Daniel purposed in his heart. He made up his mind. This is something we need to make sure we understand. When we, there's a lot of things that we say, yeah, I believe that, yeah, I believe that, yeah, I believe it. We need to make up our minds that there are things that we don't budge on. I don't care what the circumstances are. There are certain non-negotiables in my life. We talk about in dealing with family issues. There are certain hills that you die on. Certain things that I'm going to put my foot, I am immovable on these things. And Daniel purposes in his heart. He's determined. This is the way it is. This is the way it is. Now, he's going to be very diplomatic, though. But he's still not going to budge. I think sometimes we get ourselves in trouble because we become obnoxious in standing for what is right, and we don't have to be. Now, sometimes, but most of the time it's not needed. Daniel purposed in his heart that he would not defile himself with the portion of the king's meat, nor with the wine which he drank. Therefore, he requested of the prince of the eunuchs that he might not defile himself. Goes back to Ashpenaz, who's in charge of the whole outfit there. He's the dorm supervisor, if you will, and says, I'm a Jew. I eat food according to the dietary restrictions in the book of Leviticus. You won't know anything about this, but this is the way it is. And I can't eat what the king eats. Probably it was stuff that had been offered to the gods of Babylon. Very likely it's not going to be kosher. You know, there's a lot of things that we eat that are not kosher. If my son goes to an Asian buffet, which is one of his favorite things to do, if he goes to an Asian buffet, he makes sure that his plate is filled with things that are not kosher. Yes, I'm going to fill my plate with pork and shrimp and crab if they have that, and maybe mussels and clams and all those things that Jan loves. None of those things are kosher. And a lot of places around the world, they eat those things. We don't think in the Middle East that they eat pork. Because Muslims don't eat pork and Jews don't eat pork. I'll have you know, wild boar are native to that whole region as long as there's enough moisture. And in ancient times, they ate that stuff. All right? They ate a lot of things that would not be allowed today by the current religion that rules that region, but that was not the case. It was totally different here 2,500 years ago. And so Daniel I can't eat this stuff. If I'm going to be true to God, if I'm going to be obedient as a covenant, obedient Old Testament Jew, I cannot eat the stuff that they are telling me to eat. It's been offered to pagan gods. It's been offered to demons, Paul would say. The animals that this meat and food is coming from is probably in some cases not kosher. I can't eat this. A lot of cultures ate horses and donkeys. He said, oh, that's gross. Hey, You talk to a Frenchman, man. That's nice food. I have relatives in Quebec. My Aunt Nancy was, this is years and years ago, decades ago. She was hosting a cookout for a whole bunch of people in Quebec. They lived there for ages. And, you know, pinching pennies. She'd heard that she could get some ground beef at such and such a place real cheap. And she went there and she bought, I don't know, 20 pounds of the stuff. And they're making the hamburgers and people are eating. I said, man, this is really good. This is amazing. This is, where did you get this? And she told them and all of a sudden everybody got quiet. It didn't come from LC. it came from Mr. Ed, all right? A lot of cultures do that. There's a huge demand for donkeys in Western China. They eat them, all right? Donkey meatballs, yeah, big delicacy there. And, of course, you guys are familiar with eating dogs and cats in Southeast Asia and all of it, are they? All right. So Daniel can't eat this stuff and be in accord with the dietary restrictions there in Leviticus. It says, now Daniel, or God had brought Daniel into favor and tender love with the prince of the eunuchs. The guy really likes Daniel. And the prince of the eunuchs said unto Daniel, I fear my lord the king who hath appointed your meat and your drink. The king made these stipulations. This is not just general policy. The king expressly mentioned this. For why should he see your faces worse liking than the children which are of your sort? Then shall ye make me to endanger my head to the king. I got 100 young people here, and they're eating the finest of the fine. And when the king comes through and checks out the troops as you guys are all lined up for morning roll call and whatnot, and he comes across you four and says, hey, what's wrong with these guys? These pasty-faced little skinny kids. The rest of you are all supposed to be flushed and fat and happy, and I got these four little pasty-faced kids. What is the deal? Ashpenaz, what's going on here? Well, sir, all right, we're done with it. He's gone contrary to the king's orders. So Ashpenaz isn't going to budge on this. So Daniel tries plan B. Instead of going to the dorm supervisor, I'm going to go to the hall leader, the guy who's just, you know, couple doors down. He's in charge of a few rooms here, and we're gonna see if I can try something here. Take the next step. He doesn't quit. He doesn't give up. I'm determined to do what is right, and I will try. I will endeavor to do right within the confines of my circumstances before I reach the point where I have to be defiant. So he comes to Melzar, whom the prince of the eunuchs had set over Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. And Daniel offers him a proposal. He says, prove thy servants, I beseech thee, 10 days. Now, how long are they in this regimen? 3 years. 10 days. That's safe. That's safe. We're not asking for a permanent thing. I'm not asking for 3 months or a semester or a quarter program, whatever they were on. Trimester? No. All right, 10 days. And here's the test. I want you to give us vegetables. That word pulse is vegetables, various vegetables. If you were to see what was served to these guys, you might be able to recognize a couple of things, but most of the stuff is going to be vastly different than you and I would come across at the produce department at our stores. There's a few things that are the same, but a lot of stuff didn't exist then. Broccoli was unknown. Carrots that are orange, unknown. A lot of things that we see in the grocery store, they had no idea. There's very few things that were even around in Roman times that we eat today. They had a few kinds of beans and stuff. Beans? A few kinds. But they're eating lots of different kinds of greens.
Oh, greens. Okay.
A lot of different kinds of greens. And there's going to be some fruit. They'd still be able to eat figs. They'd still be able to eat pomegranates and apricots and olives and a number of other things that they grew there. Sorry, no watermelon trees. So give us vegetables to eat, water to drink. It's nutritious. It'll work. And after the 10 days, let our countenances, our faces, verse 13, be looked upon before thee. And compare us to the other guys here in the dorm that eat the king's meat. And as thou seest, deal with thy servants. You decide after you put us to the test. Now, God is going to intervene here. I'm sorry. If you are, you're not going to look quite the same. You might actually look better, but you're not going to be looking quite the same, as the rest of the folks here that would be eating the stuff that the king's eating. At least not under normal circumstances. I think God is intervening in this particular case. So he consented. Hey, for 10 days, I can deal with this. And, it's not going to be a dangerous thing. I'll cooperate for the 10 days test. Verse 15. And at the end of the 10 days, their countenances, their faces, appeared fairer and fatter in flesh. Maybe they were eating avocados, don't know. Then all the children that did eat the portion of the king's meat. Then Melzar, doesn't even have to go to Ashpenaz. Melzar is going to take it upon himself, took away the portion of their meat and the wine which they should drink and gave them pulse, gave them vegetables. And as for so they were able to do that. They don't have to go contrary to their conscience. They don't have to go contrary to what God has decreed. God intervened on their behalf. Now we know that God does not put his children, in a no-win situation where they have to sin. However, sometimes the cost of not sinning is very great. People have died for a failure to compromise. God has a purpose for these four fellows and therefore has sustained them and works to allow them to continue on with their training so they can end up in a high position. Verse 17. As for these four children, these are young people. You know, I had 18, 19, and 20-year-olds at my house last night, and Aaron and I kept calling them the kids. That's because that's what they are! All right. As for these four children, God gave them knowledge and skill in all learning and wisdom, and Daniel had understanding in all vision and dreams. So God gave these people particular expertise. The talents you have, the brains you have, the different skills and so on, the skill set that you have, you hone things. But you start out with capabilities. You start out with abilities to learn different things. And God gave these fellows some tremendous ability to learn. I mentioned that I got the book and I'm reading Dr. Stephen D. Anderson's treatise on Darius the Mede. Here's a guy that's about 30 years old. I don't even know if he's that old. He has, I don't think it's actually gone to print, but he has an 8-volume set of Bible interpretation that's available online on his website. He's written a couple of other books. There was a blog with Bibles International, and they were trying, a whole bunch of people, they were hashing out this particular phrase, this particular wording. And it was an awkward thing, and there was some different opinion. They were trying to hack, nobody could really get their heads wrapped around how this thing could best be expressed in English and so on. And he was reading the blog, and he wrote out 3 paragraphs, submitted it, and it answered all the questions. Brilliant guy! Real kind of quiet and subdued. Easygoing fella. If you saw him in a crowd, you'd figure he rode his bicycle there to the church, and he's just, you know, an easygoing fella. The guy is scary smart. He's a linguist. He's just a brilliant, brilliant guy. What's he going to do with his brains and his degrees? We don't know for sure. What he does? How does he support himself? Well, he lives with his parents and he builds furniture. But he is able to write these books and do some of these things on the side and help out different. And he's done. Taught a modular at an overseas seminary. You know, who knows what the Lord's going to do with this guy? But some people have brains that just scare you. And that is, that's what God did with these four young people. That at the end of days, now at the end of the days, verse 18, that the king had said he would bring them in. So after the 3 years, the prince of the eunuchs brought them in before Nebuchadnezzar. Nebuchadnezzar, by the way, is a smart guy. He's king for over 40 years. He is a great administrator. He is a great military commander. He is a great builder. This guy is considered one of the top kings of ancient times, just as far as what he was able to accomplish in his abilities. So he himself, he's not delegating this. He's interviewing these young people at graduation, determining where I'm going to put them in my administration. I took the cream of the young people out of the territories that I conquered, and I've trained them for 3 years, and now I'm going to take the cream off of that and put them to work for me. So he interviews them. And the king communed with them, verse 19. And among them all was found none like Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. Therefore, they stood before the king. They're in his presence. They're there to answer his questions. They're there to deal with various things. I love it when I'm dealing with something like this and I can't think of something and I've got Taylor or Sam Sharar. And I just look at one of them and boom, they've got the answer. Brilliant guys. It's a lot of young people that get the internet. Oh boy, I get to play games. These guys sit there and just fill their brains with information. You want to know anything you could possibly imagine about tanks. But tanks that were used in some obscure country in 1927. Oh, they used the such and such and such and such. Here are the liabilities and this is the thing that was best at. They know all this stuff. And not just about that. You name almost any subject. And they could pull stuff out like that. It's just mind-boggling to me. Alright. That's what Nebuchadnezzar wanted. He wants guys with answers. He wants guys that he can depend on. This is a fellow that if I tell him I need this done, he knows it's gonna be done, it's gonna be done well, and it's gonna be done right. And so he takes these guys out, and these are the top four of their class. And it says in verse 20, and in all matters of wisdom and understanding that the king inquired of them, he found them 10 times better. By the way, you're going to see that kind of an expression, especially in the book of Daniel, but sometimes other places. It's a figure of speech. It isn't like everybody else was only scored 10%, but these guys scored 100%. That's not the idea. The idea is that these are the best of the best, or this, it's a superlative term. He found them to be the very best, is the idea there. And better than all the magicians and astrologers that were in his realm. These young guys were brighter than the guys that he'd had there serving him for years. And then it says, and Daniel continued even into the first year of Cyrus. Daniel was in government service for over 65 years. This, by the way, does not mean that Daniel died at this point. We have at least one other prophecy in the book of Daniel that is in the third year of Cyrus. So Daniel is probably, when we get toward, when he was an old man in some of these, he's probably in his 80s, early 80s. But God brought him to this position and sustained him. And when we get to mentioning in passing in verse 21, you find out that even Daniel, when he was an old, old man who had been doing this for ages and ages, and by the way, he did go into at least semi-retirement for a while, but he was still the best of the best. When push came to shove, yeah, we're going to bring Daniel out of retirement because we need somebody that's that bright and that smart. It's kind of like, if I remember right, Douglas MacArthur, going into World War II, was actually retired, and they brought him out of retirement to lead the troops in World War II because they needed somebody that was the best of the best. So we're going to, you over here. Yeah, you're the, I know we got these guys here, but we want you. All right. And so Daniel, they did that with Daniel, when he got to be an old man, several occasions, as we'll see as we get into the book, they brought him out of retirement to deal with certain things because he was the best of the best. God has him in a place at a particular time for a particular purpose. And we'll see that as we go through the book. Okay. Any questions here in chapter one? Let me answer this question. It comes up. Were Daniel, Hananiah, Azariah, Mishael, and so on, were these guys made eunuchs? We don't know. Some of the commentaries say yes. Some of them say no. I lean actually they probably were. There's no mention of families, wives, anything in conjunction with them. So I would think it more likely than not, but there's nothing in the text that demands that was the case.
Fourteen,
fifteen, sixteen. All right. Anything else? All right, let's close in prayer. Father, we thank you for your word. Father, thank you that that you work out the circumstances to bring the right people into the right place at the right time for the right purpose. And Father, help us to recognize that in our own lives. Father, thank you that Daniel made up his mind. Daniel and his companions made up their minds. They were going to do what was right, even if it cost them. And Father, you worked out the circumstances that it didn't cost them. And Father, sometimes you do that for us. Father, may we trust you instead of getting all upset and angry and making a scene about some things where we're trying to do what's right, but not always for the right reasons. Father, may we be diplomatic about it as long as we can. We pray for Christ's sake. Amen.